It's that time of year where we begin to critically examine ourselves before we take the Passover. In just over 2 months' time, we will be keeping the Passover. That may seem like a long time from now, but it will come very quickly. The weeks just seem to fly by. At least that's been my experience. If you find yourself with what seems like all the time in the world, then I'd like for you to catch me after services today. I'd like a moment of your time, get some tips from you. Passover is approaching. As we begin examining ourselves, let's consider some qualities that a servant of God should possess. Now, there are a lot of qualities that we could identify. If I went around the room today, I believe that we would make a very long list of qualities of a godly servant. But I've chosen two for us to look at today, specifically to consider their impact on our lives as we prepare for Passover. The Society for Human Resource Management is the world's largest HR professional society, representing 285,000 members all across the globe. They have members in 165 countries around the world. And in a recent study, a recent survey conducted by the SHRM, 97% of HR professionals considered employee dependability to be very important. 97%. You know, I'd really like to meet those 3% that don't think employee dependability is very important. I would really like to understand just how they formulate that opinion. But regardless, 97% say that employee dependability is very important. Employers want an employee that they can rely on, one that demonstrates a track record of regular, punctual attendance. They're looking for commitment from their employees. Dependability. How dependable are you at your job? I realize that some of you are retired, and before you tune me out and say this doesn't apply to me, how dependable are you in your service to God? As we lead up to the Passover, and as we examine ourselves in the weeks leading up to that evening, let's reflect on that question. How dependable of a servant am I to God? We know that it's an important quality to employers, but what about to God? What does it mean to be a dependable servant to God? What does it look like? Let's begin by turning to the book of Daniel, chapter 1. Daniel's an individual that we can all relate to, no matter what age we may be. We can all relate to Daniel. Before I get ahead of myself, let's begin reading in Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. Daniel chapter 1, verse 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with some of the articles of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar, to the house of his God. And he brought the articles into the treasure house of his God. Verse 3. Then the king instructed Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, to bring some of the children of Israel, and some of the king's descendants, and some of the nobles, young men in whom there was no blemish, but good-looking, gifted in all wisdom, possessing knowledge, and quick to understand, who had ability to serve in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the language of the literature of the Chaldeans. Verse 5. And the king appointed for them a daily provision of the king's delicacies, and of the wine which he drank, and 3 years of training for them, so that at the end of that time they might serve before the king. Verse 6. Now from among those of the sons of Judah were Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So we're introduced to the Babylonian captivity here. Two things to note specifically. Verse 4, these were young men. It says that they were young men with whom there was no blemish. And secondly, verse 6, Daniel was one of those young men. Let's continue reading in verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's delicacies, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the chief of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. As I read that account, I don't see a way to prove with certainty that that was unclean food. Perhaps it was. Perhaps it was meat sacrificed to idols. We're not 100% sure. But what we do know is that Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself. Whatever the king's delicacies may have been, Daniel was more concerned about his relationship with God than he was with filling his stomach with food. Right from the beginning of the account, we see Daniel staying close to God. He was a dependable servant. Even as a young man, he could be counted on to make the correct decision. Let's turn over to Colossians chapter 3. Daniel would not defile himself, but there was more to his service to God than just his diet. As we turn over to Colossians chapter 3, we'll see another aspect of service to God. Colossians chapter 3, verse 22. Colossians 3:22. Bondservants, obey in all things your masters according to the flesh, not with eye service, as men pleasers, but in sincerity of heart, fearing God. 23. And whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord, and not to men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. For you serve the Lord Christ. We're admonished here to work hard in whatever task we're given. It says, whatever you do, do it heartily. In our jobs, whatever profession that might be, it says that we're supposed to be working hard as to the Lord. If you've got a job, you may not be a bond servant, but you are an employee, and it's the same principle. This passage tells us that we are serving God by working hard. Again, it says, whatever you do, do it heartily, as to the Lord and not to men. Now that we've read that, let's go back to the book of Daniel, chapter 6. Daniel chapter 6. By this time, we will have transitioned from Nebuchadnezzar's reign to Darius. So now Daniel is serving Darius the Mede. Daniel chapter 6, verse 1. Daniel chapter 6, verse 1. It pleased Darius to set over the kingdom 120 satraps, to be over the whole kingdom, and over these three governors, of whom Daniel was one, that the satraps might give account to them, so that the king would suffer no loss. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors and satraps, because an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. Verse 4. So the governors and satraps sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could find no charge or fault, because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. Daniel was appointed governor, one of three governors, to be over the whole kingdom. And they, of course, answered to Darius the Mede. Consider what we read back in Colossians chapter 3. Serve your masters as to the Lord, not men pleasers, not for eye service, but to serve God. We see this throughout Daniel's story. He distinguished himself above the others. They could find no fault with him. He was faithful to the position that he was assigned. Maybe you and I, maybe we're not given a high level of authority like Daniel was. But the same principle applies to us as well. As we examine ourselves leading up to the Passover, what do we see? Whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord. Does that describe us? What sort of rating would you give yourself in that department? How would I rate myself? Are we faithful to the position that we've been assigned? Can any error or fault be found in us? In regards to dependability, let's look at one more aspect of Daniel's dependability. We'll stay here in chapter 6, Daniel chapter 6. So there's a nefarious plot stirred up against Daniel. They couldn't really find anything wrong with his behavior. And it says there was no fault found in him. So they searched for a loophole. These conspirators knew that Daniel obeyed the laws of the land, but not if they conflicted with God's law. Let's keep reading in verse 5. Then these men said, "We shall not find any charge against this Daniel unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God." So these governors and satraps thronged before the king and said thus to him, "King Darius, live forever. All the governors of the kingdom, the administrators and satraps, the counselors and advisors have consulted together to establish a royal statute and to make a firm decree that whoever petitions any god or man for 30 days, except you, O king, shall be cast into the den of lions. Now, O king, establish the decree and sign the writing so that it cannot be changed according to the law of the Medes and Persians, which does not alter." Verse 9. "Therefore, King Darius signed the written decree." To go back to where we started this afternoon, he wouldn't defile himself with the king's delicacies. So if it conflicted with his relationship with God, you could depend on Daniel to choose God every time. These conspirators, those other governors and the satraps, they knew that. They knew that as well. And they used it against him. What was dependable Daniel's reaction? Verse 10. "Now when Daniel knew that the writing was signed, he went home. And in his upper room, with his windows open toward Jerusalem, he knelt down on his knees 3 times that day and prayed and gave thanks before his God, as was his custom since early days." 3 times a day, Daniel prayed. Not just that day, every day, as was his custom since early days. So this was a pattern of behavior that Daniel exhibited for a long time. When he purposed in his heart to obey God rather than men, he set a wonderful example of dependability. God could count on Daniel to remain faithful. Regardless of the consequences, Daniel was going to obey God. He epitomizes dependability. And there were consequences. We know that. They threw him into the lion's den. But God protected him, didn't he? Have you ever considered the timeline for all of this? When Daniel was thrown into that lion's den, he was no spring chicken. He'd been there in Babylon for a long time. He was a young man during the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. And it would have been well over 60 years later when Babylon fell to Darius the Mede. Drop down to verse 28. "So this Daniel prospered in the reign of Darius and in the reign of Cyrus the Persian." Altogether, this was a captivity of 70 years. Throughout that whole time, Daniel displayed an amazing example of dependability. He remained obedient to God's law. Even when faced with conflict, he faithfully served in the appointment that he was given. And he was faithful with his prayer life as well. Let's go over to Hebrews chapter 3. That's one thing that I really love about Daniel. Both young Christians and older Christians alike, we can all relate to Daniel. He was dependable as a young man, and many years later, towards the end of the captivity, he remained steadfast. Hebrews chapter 3, let's read verse 14. Hebrews 3:14. "For we have become partakers of Christ if we hold the beginning of our confidence steadfast to the end." That was the case with Daniel. He remained steadfast to the end. Do we see that with ourselves? What is our level of dependability? Do we have room for improvement? Do I? That's something to ask ourselves as we prepare for the Passover. What's another important quality for a servant of God to possess? I'd like for us to consider one more quality this afternoon, and it's one that you might not immediately have come to mind. Let's go over to Genesis chapter 32. Genesis 32, I'll begin reading in verse 3. Earlier in his life, Jacob was deceitful with his brother Esau. He tricked his father Isaac and took Esau's birthright. Now, Esau played a part in that as well. It says that he despised his birthright. But nonetheless, these two brothers separated on not the greatest of terms, you might say. There were hard feelings, to put it mildly. Now, after many years of these two brothers being separated, here in verse 32, we're going to see Jacob, he's scheduled to meet back up with his brother Esau. Genesis 32, verse 3. Then Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau's brother in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. Drop down to verse 6. Then the messengers returned to Jacob, saying, "We came to your brother Esau, and he also is coming to meet you. And 400 men are with him." Verse 7. So Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, and he divided the people that were with him, and the flocks and herds and camels, into two companies. And he said, "If Esau comes to the one company and attacks it, then the other company which is left will escape." So Jacob, he's worried about his brother's reaction. He had a bit of a guilty conscience, you might say. As you continue on with the chapter, Jacob prays to God in verses 9 through 12. And it's not just a prayer filled with generalities either. He's very specific in that prayer. Just as a side note, that's something for us to consider in our own prayer life, to be specific. I'll save that for another time, but it would make for a very interesting personal Bible study. Let me stay on topic here, though. I want to continue reading in verse 22, Genesis 32, 22. "And he arose that night and took his two wives, his two female servants, and his 11 sons," so Benjamin's not in the picture yet, "and crossed over the ford of Jabbok. He took them, sent them over the brooks, and sent over what he had." Verse 24. "Then Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. Now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he touched the socket of his hip, and the socket of Jacob's hip was out of joint as he wrestled with him. And he said, 'Let me go, for the day breaks.' But he said," this is Jacob, "'I will not let you go unless you bless me.' So he said to him, 'What is your name?' He said, 'Jacob.' And he said, 'Your name shall no longer be called Jacob, but Israel, for you have struggled with God and with men and have prevailed.'" That's a nice story and all, but how does it apply to us? Well, you could look at it from a number of perspectives. On one hand, you have Jacob wrestling with God. And we could make the analogy that when we resist God, we wrestle with God, grieving the Holy Spirit, allowing human nature to tug us away. Wrestle with God. Or you could make the analogy of visible change. He touched Jacob's hip, and it immediately went out of joint. And after everything's said and done, it says that Jacob walked with a limp. After this intervention by God, Jacob was visibly changed. And we can make that analogy with ourselves as well. We've been called. Are we changed? What sort of changes do we see? Have we put on the new man? But there's another analogy lying within this story. There's a very unique characteristic on display. One that I believe is a defining characteristic of a servant of God. What is it? It's tenacity. I've identified it, but let's define it. Just what is tenacity? According to the Oxford Dictionary, tenacity is defined as the quality of being able to grip something firmly, of being very determined. In the book of Job, it says that no purpose of God can be withheld from him. And in Jeremiah, God says, I am the Lord, the God of all flesh. Is there anything that's too hard for me? So when Jacob's wrestling with God, let's read it again. Genesis 32, 25. Now when he saw that he did not prevail against him, he did not prevail against Jacob. Does this mean that it wasn't possible? That he just didn't have the strength to overcome Jacob? Of course not. What this verse is telling us is that Jacob could not be turned away. He would not let go. Jacob was tenacious. Now, as you read through this account, perhaps you see a bit of self-seeking. Maybe. But I want to use this as a springboard into our role as servants of God. As we reflect upon our relationship with Him, do we have tenacity? I don't mean wrestling with God. I mean tenacity. Gripping on and not letting go. Let's go over to Joshua chapter 22, verse 5. Joshua 22, verse 5. I quite enjoy the book of Joshua. He seems to have been a man that was straightforward and to the point. And I think this verse does a very nice job of summarizing what it means to serve God. Joshua chapter 22, verse 5. Joshua 22, 5. But take careful heed. So right away, he's telling us, this is very important. Pay attention. Take careful heed. To do the commandment and the law, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you. To love the Lord your God. To walk in all His ways. To keep His commandments. To hold fast to Him. And to serve Him with all your heart and all your soul. Again, I think that's a good summary. Love God. Walk in His ways. Keep His commandments. Serve Him with all of your heart. But look what else is tucked in there. Hold fast to God. What exactly does that mean? Tenacity. Remember what the Oxford Dictionary says. The quality of being able to grip something firmly. Of being very determined. Servants of God. That's what we're focusing on today. And we just read it there in the book of Joshua. It says, serve Him. Serve God. Holding fast to God goes hand in hand with serving Him. Jacob would not let go. He could not be turned away. How tenacious are we in our relationship with God? Do we have the same approach? And by that I mean, are we focused, tenaciously holding fast to God? Let's continue to build upon that concept of holding fast. I want to zero in on that phrase, hold fast. We are His servants, and we're told to do that. So I think it's important to fully understand just what that means. It's Strong's Concordance number 1692, DVAC. If you've got a King James Bible, it doesn't say hold fast. It uses a different word. In the King James Bible, it says cleave unto Him. Now, when I see the word cleave, I naturally think of Genesis chapter 2. Turn over there with me if you would. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. Right after God created man and woman, they were given very specific instructions. I'm going to read this out of the King James translation. Genesis chapter 2, verse 24. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. That's the same word that's over in Joshua. Strong's number 1692. God created marriage between man and woman, and that they shall become one flesh. And it was His desire that nothing would separate them. Over in the book of Malachi, God says He hates divorce. So when you think about holding fast to God, that's the idea, not allowing anything to separate us. Turn with me, if you would, to Ruth chapter 1. Let's continue digging into this phrase, hold fast to God. The same word is used in the book of Ruth as well. Naomi's husband Elimelech dies. Then her two sons die, leaving her with two daughters-in-law. One of them returns back to the land of Moab, but not Ruth. Ruth chapter 1, verse 14. Ruth chapter 1, verse 14. Then they lifted up their voices and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. Ruth clung to her. That's Strong's number 1692. Hold fast, cleave, clung. Let's continue reading in verse 15. And she said, look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people and your God my God. Where you die, I will die. And there I will be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts you and me. Ruth was all in. Nothing was going to separate Ruth from Naomi. I mean, you talk about tenacity. Ruth had it. These were not just empty words spoken either. She lived those words. How about us? As we reflect upon ourselves in Passover preparation, let nothing deter us from pursuing perfection. Hold fast to God. Cleave to Him. Become one with Him. Nothing should separate us from Him. There's a lesson there for the upcoming days of unleavened bread. Sin does separate us from God, doesn't it? Are we putting it out? Do we have a firm grip? Are we holding fast to God? Or do we allow sin to put a wedge between us? We began today by reading about Daniel's dependability. Tenacity and dependability. They go hand in hand. I really don't see how you can have one without the other. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 6 and read part of what we skimmed over earlier. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 6. So there's a plot against him. How does Daniel respond? Daniel chapter 6, verse 11. We touched on it earlier. We pointed out that he prayed three times a day. But let's begin reading here in verse 11. Daniel chapter 6, verse 11. Then these men assembled and found Daniel praying and making supplication before his God. Where do they find him? Praying to God. He was seeking to be at one with God. Daniel had tenacity too. You know the story. They convinced the king to throw him into the lion's den. Drop down to verse 16. So the king gave the command, and they brought Daniel and cast him into the den of lions. But the king spoke, saying to Daniel, your God, whom you serve continually, he will deliver you. A foreign king even noticed Daniel's tenacity. The God whom you serve continually will deliver you. Continually. Not part of the time, not occasionally. He served God continually. And just for emphasis, we can keep reading in verse 19. Then the king arose very early in the morning and went in haste to the den of lions. And when he came to the den, he cried out with a lamenting voice to Daniel. The king spoke, saying to Daniel, Daniel, servant of the living God, has your God, whom you serve continually, been able to deliver you from the lions? Once again, Daniel, servant of the living God, whom you serve continually. It seems to have been obvious to everyone, doesn't it? The conspirators knew. The king knew. Daniel was tenacious. Was clearly visible to everyone that was around him. Can the same be said for me? You? In the business world, for annual performance reviews, some companies use a tool that's called employee self-evaluation, where the employees are encouraged to evaluate themselves. What have you been doing well? What are some areas that you could improve upon? We do the same thing in the weeks prior to the Passover. We examine ourselves. As we do so this year, I'd like for us to consider these two qualities of a godly servant: dependability and tenacity. How are we doing? Can we be counted on to make godly decisions, no matter the consequences? Will we hold fast to God and serve Him with all of our heart and all of our soul? I hope the answer to those questions is a resounding yes. We are fellow workers in the truth. We are fellow workers for the kingdom of God. Let's be diligent to present ourselves approved to God.